human representations of the divine ideal of love. It is impossible to express the nature of this supreme and absolute ideal of love in human language. Even the highest flight of human imagination is incapable of comprehending it in all its infinite perfection and beauty. Nevertheless, the followers of the religion of love, in its higher as well as its lower forms, in all countries, have all along had to use the inadequate human language to comprehend and to define their own ideal of love. Nay, more, human love itself, in all varied forms, has been made to typify this inexpressible love. Man can think of divine things only in his own human way. To us, the absolute can be expressed only in our relative language. The whole universe is to us a writing of the infinite in the language of the finite. Therefore, bhaktas make use of all the common terms associated with the common love of humanity in relation to God and His worship through love. Some of the great writers on Parabhakti have tried to understand and experience this divine love in so many different ways. The lowest form in which this love is apprehended is what they call the peaceful, the Shanta. When a man worships God without the fire of love in him, without its madness in his brain, when his love is just the calm, commonplace love, a little higher than mere form ceremonies and symbols, but not at all characterized by the madness of intensely active love, it is said to be Shanta. We see some people in the world who like to move on slowly and others who come and go like the whirlwind. The Shanta Bhakta is calm, peaceful, gentle. The next higher type is that of Dasya, that is servantship. It comes when a man thinks he is a servant of the Lord. The attachment of the faithful servant and master is his ideal. The next type of love is Sakhya, friendship. Thou art our beloved friend. Just as a man opens his heart to his friend and knows that the friend will never chide him for his faults but will always try to help him, just as there is the idea of equality between him and his friend, so equal love flows in and out between the worshipper and his friendly God. Thus God becomes our friend, the friend who is near, the friend to whom we may freely tell all the tales of our lives. The innermost secrets of our hearts we may plead before Him with a great assurance of safety and support. He is the friend whom the devotee accepts as an equal. God is viewed here as our playmate. We may well say that we are all playing in this universe. Just as children play their games, just as the most glorious kings and emperors play their own games, so is the beloved Lord Himself in sport with this universe. He is perfect. He does not want anything. Why should He create? Activity is always with us for the fulfillment of a certain want, and want always presupposes imperfection. God is perfect. He has no wants. Why should He go on with His work of an ever active creation? What purpose has He in view? The stories about God creating this world for some end or other that we imagine are good as stories, but not otherwise. It is all really in sport. The universe is His play going on. The whole universe must, after all, be a big piece of pleasing fun to Him. If you are poor, enjoy that as fun. If you are rich, enjoy the fun of being rich. If dangers come, it is also good fun. If happiness comes, there is more good fun. The world is just a playground, and we are here having good fun, having a game, and God is with us playing all the while, and we are with Him playing. God is our eternal playmate. How beautifully He is playing! The play is finished when the cycle comes to an end. There is rest for shorter or longer time. Again, all come out and play. It is only when you forget that it is all play and that you are also helping in the play, it is only then that misery and sorrows come. Then the heart becomes heavy, then the world weighs upon you with tremendous power. But as soon as you give up the serious idea of reality as a characteristic of the change incidents of the 3 minutes of life and know it to be but a stage on which we are playing, helping him to play, at once misery ceases for you. He plays in every autumn. He is playing when he is building up earth and suns and moons. He is playing with the human heart, with animals, with plants. We are his chessmen. He puts the chessmen on the board and shakes them up. He arranges us first in one way and then in another, and we are consciously or unconsciously helping his play. And oh bliss, we are his playmates. The next is what is known as Vatsalya, loving God not as our father but as our child. This may look peculiar, but it is a discipline to enable us to detach all ideas of power from the concept of God. The idea of power brings with it awe. There should be no awe in love. The ideas of reverence and obedience are necessary for the form of character. But when character is formed, when the lover has tasted the calm, peaceful love and tasted also a little of its intense madness, then he need talk no more of ethics and discipline. Conceive God as mighty, majestic and glorious, as the Lord of the universe or as the God of gods. The lover says he does not care. It is to avoid this association with God or the fear-creating sense of power that he worships God as his own child. The mother and the father are not moved by awe in relation to the child. They cannot have any reverence for the child. They cannot think of asking any favor from the child. The child's position is always that of the receiver, and out of love for the child, the parents will give up their bodies 100 times over. 1,000 lives they will sacrifice for that one child of theirs, and therefore God is loved as a child. This idea of loving God as a child comes into existence and grows naturally among those religious sects which believe the incarnation of God. For the Mohammedans, it is impossible to have this idea of God as a child. They will shrink from it with a kind of horror. But the Christian and the Hindu can realize it easily because they have the baby Jesus and the baby Krishna. The women in India often look upon themselves as Krishna's mother. Christian mothers also may take up the idea that they are Christ's mothers, and it will bring to the West the knowledge of God's divine motherhood which they so much need. The superstitions of awe and reverence in relation to God are deeply rooted in the heart of our hearts, and it takes long years to sink entirely into our ideas of reverence and veneration, of awe and majesty and glory with regard to God. There is one more human representation of the divine ideal of love. It is known as Madhura, sweet, and is the highest of all representations. It is indeed based on the highest manifestation of love in this world, and this love is also the strongest known to man. What love shakes the whole nature of man, what love runs through every atom of his being, makes him mad, makes him forget his own nature, transforms him, makes him either a god or man, as the love between man and woman. In this sweet representation of divine love, God is our husband. We are all women. There are no men in this world. There is but one man, and this is he, our beloved. All that love which man gives to woman, or woman to man, has here to be given up to the Lord. All the different kinds of love which we see in the world and with which we are more or less playing merely have God as the one goal, but unfortunately man does not know the infinite ocean into which this mighty river of love is constantly flowing, and so foolishly he often tries to direct it to little dolls of human beings. The tremendous love for the child that is in human nature is not for the little doll of child. If you bestow it blindly and exclusively on the child, you will suffer in consequence. But through such suffering will come the awakening by which you are sure to find out that the love which is in you, if it given to any human being, will sooner or later bring pain and sorrow as a result. Our love must therefore be given to the highest one who never dies and never changes, to him in the ocean whose love there is neither ebb nor flow. Love must get to its right destination. It must go unto him who is really the infinite ocean of love. All rivers flow into the ocean. Even the drop of water coming down from the mountain side cannot stop its course after reaching a brook or a river, however big it may be. At last, even that drop somehow does find its way to the ocean. God is the one goal of all our passions and emotions. If you want to be angry with him. Chide your beloved, chide your friend. Whom else can you safely chide? Mortal man will not patiently put up with your anger. There will be a reaction. If you are angry with me, I am sure quickly to react, because I cannot patiently put up with your anger. Say unto the beloved, why do you not come to me? Why do you leave me thus alone? Where is there any enjoyment but in him? What enjoyment can there be in little clots of earth? It is the crystallized essence of infinite enjoyment that we have to see, and that is in God. Let all our passions and emotions go up unto him. They are meant for him, for if they miss their mark and go over, they become willy. And when they go straight to the mark, to the Lord, even the lowest of them becomes transfigured. All the energies of the human body and mind, howsoever they may express themselves, have the Lord as their one goal, as their ekayana. All loves and all passions of human heart must go to God. He is the beloved. Whom else can this heart love? He is the most beautiful, the most sublime. He is beauty itself, sublimity itself. Who in this universe is more beautiful than he? Who in this universe is more fit to become the husband than he? Who in this universe is fitter to be loved than he? So let him be the husband, let him be the beloved. Often it so happens that divine lovers who sing of this divine love accept the language of human love in all its aspects as adequate to describe it. Fools do not understand this. They never will. They look at it only with the physical eye. They do not understand the mad throes of this spiritual love. How can they? For one kiss of thy lips, O beloved, one who has been kissed by thee has his thirst for thee increasing for ever. All his sorrows vanish and he forgets all things except thee alone. As fair after that kiss of the beloved, that touch of his lips which makes the bhakta mad, which makes a man a god, to him who has been blessed with such a kiss, the whole of nature changes, worlds vanish, suns and moons die out, and the universe itself melts away into that infinite ocean of love. That is the perfection of madness of love. Hey, the true spiritual lover does not rest even there. Even the love of husband and wife is not mad enough for him. The bhaktas take up also the idea of illegitimate love because it is so strong. The impropriety of it is not at all the thing they have in view. The nature of this love is such that the more obstructions there are for its free play, the more passionate it becomes. The love between husband and wife is smooth. There are no obstructions there. So the bhaktas take up the idea of a girl who is in love with her own beloved, and her mother or father or husband objects to such love. And the more anybody abstracts the course of her love, so much the more is her love tending to grow in strength. Human language cannot describe how Krishna in the groves of Vrinda was madly loved, how at the sound of his voice the ever blessed gopis rushed out to meet him, forgetting everything, forgetting this world and its duties, its sorrows. Man, oh man, you speak of divine love and at the same time are able to attend to all the vanities of this world. Are you sincere? Where Rama is, there is no room for any desire. Where desire is, there is no room for Rama. These never coexist. Light and darkness, they are never together. When this highest ideal of love is reached, philosophy is the way. Who will then care for it? Freedom, salvation, nirvana, all are thrown away. Who cares to become free while in the enjoyment of divine love? Lord, I do not want wealth, nor friends, nor beauty, nor learning, nor even freedom. Let me be born again and again, and be thou ever my love. Be thou ever and ever my love. Who cares to become sugar, says the Bhakta. I want to taste sugar. Who will then desire to become free and one with God? I may know that I am He, yet will I take myself away from Him and become different so that I may enjoy the Beloved? That is what the Bhakta says. Love for love's sake is the highest. Who will not be bound hand 4,000 times over to enjoy the Beloved? No Bhakta cares for anything except love. Except to love and to be loved. His unworldly love is like the tide rushing up the river. This lover goes up the river against the current. The world calls him mad. I know one whom the world used to call mad. And this was his answer. My friends, the whole world is a lunatic asylum. Some are mad after worldly love, some after name, some after fame, some after money, some after salvation and going to heaven. In this big lunatic asylum, I am also mad. I am mad after God. If you are mad after money, I am mad after God. You are mad, so am I. I think my madness is after all the best. The true Bhakta's love is this burning madness before which everything else vanishes for him. The whole universe is to him full of love and love alone. That is how it seems to the lover. So when a man has this love in him, he becomes eternally blessed, eternally happy. This blessed madness of divine love alone can cure for ever the disease of the world that is in us. With desire, selfishness has vanished. He has drawn near to God. He has thrown off all those vain desires of which he was full before. We all have to begin as dualists in the religion of love. God is to us a separate being and we feel ourselves to be separate being also. Love then comes in the middle and man begins to approach God. And God also is nearer and nearer to man. Man takes up all the various relationships of life as father, as mother, as son, as friend, as master, as lover and projects them on his ideal of love, on his God. To him God exists as all this and the last point of his progress is reached when he feels that he has become absolutely merged in the object of his worship. We all begin with love for ourselves and the unfair claims of little self make even love selfish. At last, however, comes the full blaze of light in which this little self is seen to have become one with the infinite. man himself is transfigured in the presence of this light of love, and he realizes at last the beautiful and inspiring truth that love, the lover and the beloved are one.